Well, I'm Sally Mock. I'm 73 years old, soon to be 74. Today is Friday, June 17th, 2022. I'm in Missoula, Montana, and I'm being interviewed by my colleague, Shaylee Rager.
And I'm Shaylee Rager. I'm 25 years old. Today's date is Friday, June 17th, 2022. We're in Missoula, Montana, and I am interviewing my colleague, Sally Mock. All right. So I just have to say before we get into this, Sally, that I think you're like the interview master. So for me to interview you feels a little bit intimidating.
Oh,
but I know you don't usually answer questions, so maybe we're having
I would much rather be the interviewer than the interviewee, Shaylee. So you have the advantage, trust me.
Okay, that makes me feel slightly better.
Okay, good.
So my first question for you, Sally, is did you always want to be a journalist, or how did you fall into that career?
I had no inkling about being a journalist when I was younger. I was always interested in politics and the world larger than my small town Kansas world. But I fell into the profession. I definitely didn't have it as a goal, for sure.
Talk to me about that. Where were you before you started journalism? Do you remember your first journalism job?
I do, and I was actually I went to the University of Kansas and grew up in Kansas. And when I graduated from college, or was on the cusp of graduating, I had a double major in Western European history and German language and literature, so a total liberal arts thing, which didn't aim you towards any particular career, but I had done a summer abroad, so I thought, well, maybe I want to do the Foreign Service and be a diplomat. So I took the Foreign Service written exam and passed that, which is not easy to do, and then they give you an oral exam, and if you pass that, then you go on to be in the Foreign Service. So I went to Kansas City to do the oral exam, which was with three ex-male diplomats. And I studied up on U.S. foreign policy, et cetera, and went to the interview. And guess the first question they asked me.
Oh, let me think. I don't even know. What did they ask you?
They asked me my favorite recipe.
Oh, my goodness. I would never would have guessed that.
No, me either. Yeah. And I did not at that time cook, so I had no favorite recipe. And I think, you know, I had in mind I was going to negotiate treaties, and I think they thought I was going to serve hors d'oeuvres in the Foreign Service or something. I'm not sure, but I didn't pass the oral exam. I think they didn't like whatever recipe I made up on the spot. So when I graduated, I didn't know what to do. I went to Kansas City to live in the big city and got a clerical job working for a stock brokerage, actually. And it was kind of a ghetto for liberal arts graduates.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the only job I hated in my whole life because it was kind of a pointless occupation, actually.
Yeah.
And then some friends and I decided we wanted to move somewhere beautiful. And so we scouted Montana, bought some land, went back to Kansas City to work to pay off the land, and then moved here and did a back-to-land commune kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Where was that at?
Northwest Montana, near Trout Creek, west of Trout Creek,
okay.
Heron, Montana. Yeah.
So how long were you up there for?
5 years, and I was really lucky because this was in 1974, and the Forest Service at that time had just started affirmative action to hire more women to work in the field. So they hired me to be the wilderness ranger for the Cabinet Ranger District of the Kootenai National Forest. And I didn't know a pine tree from a fir, Shaylee.
So but you learned.
I learned and was mentored by some of the old guard in the Forest Service that worked in that. It was a very remote ranger district, actually. And I loved it. I mean, I got paid to hike every day. So that was great. That was a great introduction to Montana.
Oh,
but it had nothing to do with journalism, obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
When did you get your first journalism job?
My first journalism job, I was commissioned to write an article for a magazine called Wild America about hard rock mining in the wilderness, which was an issue in the wilderness area I worked in. And that article caught the attention of the person who was news director at Montana Public Radio. And so she invited me to be on a program she was doing on mining in the wilderness and to have me and the forest supervisor on talking about the pros and cons of mining in wilderness areas. And after that program, she said, wow, you were great. Do you have any interest in working in radio?
That's incredible.
And at that time, the funding was running out for my Wilderness Ranger position, and so I was looking for a job, and I said, sure. And the station had some federal training money, and they hired me, and that was my first job in journalism, actually.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I had no clue about the profession at all, knew nothing about radio, and learned as I went.
Which is a lot to learn with radio because there's microphone and recording and all of that.
Yeah, all the technical stuff, for sure. Yeah.
Is that when you moved to Missoula, too?
Yeah, and then I moved to Missoula. Or I'd moved, sort of semi-moved here. I was spending half my time here and half my time back in the... back to the land place.
So I don't want to get ahead of myself because I could very easily with this story. Okay. But I want to talk about and go back a little bit. When I was a kid, I was really shy, and I think people would describe me as a people pleaser. And so when I became a journalist, I really had to unlearn all of that. And it was, you know, I maybe wasn't predisposed to being a journalist because our job is to ask hard questions and have confrontation. And so I wonder what you were like as a kid and whether it would be surprising that, that you became a journalist.
Well, I share your shyness. I was a bashful kid, and I'm a bashful adult, actually. But I think that's less an issue for being a journalist than just whether you're curious. And I think curiosity is a key part of our profession. And I think, I'm sure you were a curious kid, and I was a curious kid, and I read a lot. I think that's another sort of criteria to be a journalist.
Yeah.
So the shyness, you do get over that pretty quickly. The more interaction you have with people and newsmakers and so on, the more interviews you do, the shyness, I think, just becomes less of an issue professionally, right?
Yeah, and I guess something that I've been thinking a lot more these days is that there's maybe a formula that's kind of the like status quo of what you have to be a journalist and what it has to look like, and like that doesn't have to be true for everyone, and you know, all kinds of different people can do well in this job.
So. You know, I think it's when I was getting into the profession, I think it was fairly common for people who didn't have a journalism background to get into journalism. I don't think that's true now. You can correct me, but I think now it's pretty much a necessity that you have some journalism background, either formal education or experience. And I think that's a good thing. I think the first few years I was on the air on the radio, thank God there are not still tapes of that extant.
Oh, I would love to see it. I would love to hear it.
I made so many mistakes, Shaylee, when I started in the profession because I made them as I went along. And it was 5 or 6 years before I felt comfortable doing what I was doing and did it in a way that was really, truly professional.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I encourage people to get the training that will benefit them when they get their first job, for sure.
Who was your news director?
Jill Hoyt actually was, and she went on to work for Boise Public Radio.
Okay.
Yeah, from here.
Yeah, and she was
a very good mentor.
Were you the news director directly after?
I was,
Jill.
I first started out at the station. I worked half-time in news as an anchor mostly, and then did a graveyard music show, DJ show, midnight to 4 a.m.
What did you play?
Joni Mitchell. Rolling Stones, you know. My era. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was fun. But that taught me a lot of the aspects of radio that weren't just journalism. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. There's so much in radio that's different. Like how do you speak for the ear? You know, how do you keep people engaged? And lots to learn.
Yeah.
But I want to I gotta pace myself here because I also want to talk about when you first got to Montana. I'd love to know why you came to Montana and what your first impression was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I came from Kansas, and I think Montana was just stunningly beautiful, and that's why we all move here, honestly. It's the aesthetic of the state is so incredibly gorgeous, and then the idea that you can enjoy that beauty just by stepping out your door. was very enticing. And it's an exotic place if you come from some place like actually anywhere else almost. Maybe Alaskans move here and they're not impressed, but I think anybody else who moves here is always impressed with what they find. And it's not just the physical beauty, but it's the, you know, the idea that you live in a wild place, that there's still wild animals out there that you have to be cognizant of, gives it an edge that I think is very attractive to people, and it sure was to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you had any interesting run-ins when you were working for the Forest Service or any any scary stories to tell us.
Yes. I mean, people who live in Montana for any length of time, as I have a lot of close calls, honestly, because you're pushing the envelope in ways you probably shouldn't sometimes. So, you know, I would regularly see bears on my hikes. Never had a bad encounter. Had some that were a little dicey, but nothing too bad. Actually, was more threatened by a group of bear hunters once when I was hiking because they were drunk and armed, and that was more scary than the bears, actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's a bad mix.
Yeah.
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 Do you know what year you started at Montana Public Radio?
Yeah, 1980, actually.
So I imagine that journalism during that time, I mean, it still is a male-dominated field and was very much a male-dominated field then. Is that true?
it was. You know, I would go to cover things and be the only female reporter there, but not just the only female reporter, the only female. Like if you were covering, pardon me, a local government meeting or a Forest Service meeting or something, it would be all men, you know, in the early days. And that has, I think, been the most noticeable change. It's not just that there are more women reporters. There are more women in all aspects of public life. And I remember feeling, quite the minority in the beginning, going to cover some of these meetings and so on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I wonder, I mean, what would that, how would you feel being in a room, being the only woman in these big meetings?
like I had to do really well. Like I couldn't just, do what the guys are doing and just kind of do the bare minimum. That I had to be really outstanding at what I did and ask really good questions and act like I knew what I was doing and be as professional as I could possibly be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it felt some pressure. Yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think maybe we all feel this way. That the people who come before you in your profession or whatever space you're in, they are kind of paving the way for you, and there's people before you. But I absolutely feel that, you know, you were paving this way for me, and I definitely still, you know, see sexism and you know, maybe feeling like I'm treated a little bit differently as a woman reporting on state government and reporting on politics and those things. So I'm curious, though, if you can maybe speak to some of the challenges and barriers that you came up against.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you're, sorry, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think that sexism has been eradicated.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, but it's subtle now. It used to be more blatant. Like in my day, a legislator would say, honey, or sweetheart, or something. I'm hoping they don't do that now. I hope they don't address you that way.
Right, a little more subtle.
Right, yeah. Right. But the subtle sexism is still there, and partly is that they don't expect a woman reporter still to be aggressive in what they would consider aggressive, what we would consider just being doing our job. But a male reporter could be the same way, and there would be no blinking about that or being offended by that, which I think that takes some newsmakers who are still stuck in the wrong era, takes them by surprise if you ask them tough questions and they think, who the heck are you, a female, asking me, a male in power, these kinds of questions. I think right. That still exists. Do you?
I think it does. And yeah. I do think it is, it's definitely a different reaction than a male or a man asking questions with the same level of assertiveness and
right.
You know, it's definitely a different response.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing is there's still bro culture. I think male reporters have a relationship with male newsmakers that women don't have usually. And it's that sort of wink, wink, nod, nod, did you hear this dirty joke kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that still exists, unfortunately. And it gives them, in a way, access to sources that we have to work harder to get.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do think that's true today, too. And
yeah.
I don't know if this is even a question that's possible to answer, because you talked about, you know, just feeling like you can't make mistakes, you just have to do better. But how do you feel like you kind of push through that and cut out the noise?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I loved it. I loved the profession. I love being a journalist. I love the access that you have, the witness to history, that whole thing. So that made up for a lot of what would be some drawbacks to push through, as you say. And then I just believed and still do that I have every right to ask the questions I'm asking, that's what I'm paid to do, and so that's what I'm going to do. And nothing would stop me except resigning
sure.
from doing that, right?
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah.
So I don't know if I've told you this before. I think maybe I have, but I can't remember for sure. But as I was saying earlier, I'm not a person who is like predisposed to be confrontational or assertive. I was definitely like a people pleaser growing up, and I think I've gotten a lot better at not doing that. But I used to listen to your interviews, even in college, and think, mm-hmm. that's what I want to emulate. I want to sound like...
I'm so flattered that you say that, Shaylee. Know, that's high praise.
I want to sound like Sally Mock. I can even think about one time, I can remember driving to campus, and I still remember being in my car and hearing the interview on the radio of you interviewing then candidate for Congress, Greg Gianforte, mm-hmm. and he's now our governor, and just being really... like blown away and inspired by this like really great interview, and just being, you know, being able to ask questions in the way that you were asking questions. And so I sometimes to this day, I'm going to listen to Sally to hype myself up for this, for this interview of a politician that I'm really nervous about, you know, and it gives me a good like hype up, you know, instead of like a playlist, Sally Mock interview.
Oh, wow.
I'm curious if you ever get nervous for interviews and how you get around that.
Uh-huh. I rarely get nervous. Mm-hmm. And the key to that interview and other interviews that you know are going to be challenging, I knew it was going to be a challenging interview, is to be as prepared as you possibly can be. So doing your homework gives you a confidence. If you know your stuff going into the interview, if you know if you ask Governor Gianforte this question, he's likely going to say this, and this is what he did versus what he said. If you know all that, then that preparation takes away any sort of, I think, hesitation or concern about the interview. You just kind of, you know you're ready, and you know he's going to be ready, and you see it as a challenge to kind of rise to meet the occasion. I remember that interview quite well, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I'm sure he does too. Yeah.
And I think, like you were saying, something that I try to remind myself is like, you have every right to be there, and this is our job, and right. this is, you know, someone who works for the public, and that helps too. But
Also, yeah. I don't think of it as me doing the interview. I think of it as the Montana, the listeners that are listening to the interview. I feel like they're the ones doing the interview. I'm trying to ask what I think they want to know, and have a right to know.
Yeah.
So of them, you know, if it's a public official, they are obligated to answer to the public, and that's who I represent. So.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you as well.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite interview that you've ever done?
Oh, you know, that's probably the most common question a journalist gets asked.
Yeah.
And there's no one answer to that because they're all so different, right?
Yeah.
I've interviewed a lot of famous people, and some of them were fun for sure. Hillary Clinton was a great interview. And I could, you know, name drop a lot of other people. But the most fun interviews, Shaylee, were with Montanans who opened up to me and had no reason to. They weren't public officials, but something had happened where they were making the news, and they were always so gracious to talk to me and talk to me in ways that were so honest and forthcoming, that those are the interviews I remember the most and were most touched by people being that willing to share what may have been a painful experience for them or a joyful experience, and that they would be so generous to share that with me in an honest way. Those were the interviews I always was most impressed with, actually.
Yeah. Field interviews are always so fun. To someone in their actual environment.
Right.
It's cool. But where did you interview Hillary Clinton?
Sorry?
Where did you interview Hillary Clinton?
In Missoula. She was campaigning here when she was running against Barack Obama for the nomination, and she came here, and I was one of the few reporters lucky enough to get a one-on-one interview with her. And what I was impressed with was, like, I was asking her very Montana-specific questions, of course, like force management and all that, and, man, she was up on it. I don't know if her staff had briefed her well or what, but she knew what she was talking about, and I was impressed.
Yeah, yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you have, this is a question from our mutual friend, Holly Michaels. Do you okay. have a least favorite interview you've ever done, or a hardest interview?
Least favorite and hardest. I would do that by category, probably.
Sure.
The least favorite are academics. Sometimes, you seek their advice, their expertise. If you're doing, say, a story about forest management or something, and you want to speak to someone in the forestry department who has expertise there, academics are tough because they don't speak English sometimes. They speak academia.
Yes.
And you have to translate or get them to translate as you're talking with them. And they're also kind of leery about doing the interview for some reason. So
I've had the same experience. Yeah. It's so hard. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I wonder if you can talk to me about maybe like a high point or, something that you're proudest of over your career. I know it's so hard to pick one. So
it really is. I think I'm proudest of developing Montana Public Radio News over the years. When I first started, it was just me and it was me half-time and then the full-time news director. And now we have reporters in Great Falls, Butte, Helena, a full-time State House reporter, and two full-time reporters in Missoula. So the growth of Montana Public Radio News, I think, has been really a great thing to develop and oversee and watch that. And mentoring young reporters like yourself. I have had so many talented reporters work for me over the years, and watching them develop and go on to great careers has just been a pure joy for me. Yeah.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Did you give me my office in the Capitol, Sally? I shouldn't call it my office. It's Montana Public Radio's office in the Capitol.
You're still in the basement, right? Yeah. That was my first office over there.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Actually, it's my second office. The first office I shared with two TV reporters, and we used to have to tell each other to shut up while we recorded our scripts.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. It feels like such a privilege now, and it's... journalists should absolutely have offices in the Capitol and be in there, and absolutely. And it also just feels such a privilege for me to have my own office and to close the door and be able to record and do newscasts the way,
windowless
I'd like
cubicle that it is. It's still in the Capitol, and it's great. Right. Yeah. We had to fight to get those spaces, actually.
Yeah.
It wasn't a given that they were going to give them to us. So.
What were those conversations like?
You need to make room for the media that are the Capitol Press Corps, because the print reporters had offices outside of the Capitol with their newspapers. Mm-hmm. But the broadcast reporters, like me, I went over there from Missoula. I didn't have a permanent space in Helena, and so we had to fight to get space for the broadcast reporters. Yeah.
I would love to hear any of your like prominent memories from working in the Capitol, or any anything that particularly sticks out from your time there?
I think probably working with what are now considered the icons of Montana journalism. some were there. Chuck Johnson was there. Mike Dennison, Sue O'Connell, Mike's wife, was a reporter at that time, and Ian Marquand with MTN, and Jay Cohn with TV. We were all there at the same time, and that was probably about the best crew I could have imagined being colleagues with at the Capitol. And that was my journalism training, actually. That's when I think I became a real Montana journalist. And you got to meet all the players in Montana politics. We're confined in that space, right, of the Capitol building. And you sort of ate, slept, and breathed with Montana politics while you were over there. So, and there were some really amazing legislators at that time. Francis Bardineau is another legend who was a leader in the House, and old Montana rancher who had a speech defect. And so when he gave speeches, it was such an effort. But everyone loved listening to Francis because his content was so amazing. So I think my love affair with Montana was enhanced by covering the state legislature, for sure, and got to appreciate what the state is all about and what the issues are. And Shaylee, the issues today are exactly what they were, you know, in 1985. So
it's so funny because I think, you know, journalists always get that bad rap of kind of forgetting history, that like we're so focused on, maybe not forgetting history, but you know what I mean? Like we're so focused on the now and what news is happening today that right. we maybe forget that the issues were the same
right.
back then. And I do think that's true. I, you know, so I am new to covering politics in Montana, Sally, but you've been covering politics here for decades. What do you think is unique about politics in Montana?
You know, Montana, Shaylee, it's one of those states that people are so proud of their state. I mean, I grew up in Kansas. People who grew up in Kansas love Kansas, but they're not, like, crazy about Kansas, right? Mm-hmm. But in Montana, whether you're a native Montanan or an implant, they just love it. They love the state, and they brag about it. And so I think the issues, people are so passionate here about the issues that are important to Montana. And the ones that have lingered are, you know, how do you have good jobs and protect the environment? That's like the overriding issue in Montana and has been forever. And there's never a resolution of that issue. It's something that it is developed over time, right, of how you're going to cope with that sort of inherent conflict of economic development versus protecting this amazing place and protecting the other creatures that live here, not just the humans, right?
Right.
And that's an issue that Montana has grappled with forever and ever and ever. And I think it's helpful as a journalist if you know that history and you know what the debates have been and how they've evolved over the years, and they are still evolving, actually, and how public attitudes have shifted over the years and what caused that shift. I think it's really, really important history to know for a Montana journalist, right?
Yeah.
To not just come into it as if this is something new that has popped up. It's not. It's ancient, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm curious. I mean, maybe it's just we have, you know, we talk about coal and jobs, and it, maybe there's like something else we start talking about. I don't even know how I'm trying to word this question, but yeah, I guess, how do you think we have reframed it? Like, how do you think that's been reframed over the years, that debate?
Mm-hmm. I think in the beginning it was a lot simpler. It was sort of like, don't go out in the forest and cut down every single tree like they used to, mm-hmm. because that made for great logging jobs. Let's manage the forest in a way that people can still log, but there's still going to be a forest left for people to enjoy for recreation or whatever. That was pretty simple. And now it's like nobody has the answers to how best way to manage the forest. There's tremendous difference of opinion about it, and that's in part because of the complexity of climate change, which people are way more aware of than we were 30, 40 years ago, right? So I think it's gotten way more nuanced, way more complex, but people still frame it in those old black and white ways, And that's not working to resolve that inherent conflict. It's not a workable model. So I think we have to evolve into thinking in a more nuanced, complex way. And that's probably true of every issue you can think about, not just the environment versus jobs issue. But it's something that I think journalists, that we, if we could point that out in a better way, I think that would be great. But it's a challenge. I don't have a good suggestion how to do that.
Yeah. That makes sense. And it's funny because while we're talking about this, I'm thinking about how we frame and talk about politics and how that's changed over time. And I'm also thinking about how we frame and talk about journalism has changed over time. And earlier we were talking about, you know, there are so few women who are participating in the profession. And now we have a lot more women, but we also have a lot more diverse voices in general, you know, people of different backgrounds, of different ethnicities, of different gender identities, of all those things participating in journalism now. And I always hear a lot about and think about why that's important, but I'm sure you've seen a difference in what journalism looked like before and what it looks like now. And I'd be curious to know what you see.
Right. The more diverse voices, the more interesting we are as journalists. The stories we do are so much more interesting because they're reflective of the society we live in and not just an old image of what the society should be. I think that that diversity adds to not just the content but the approach that we take to stories too. And I'll use a recent example, and I won't name names, but when the Roe versus Wade was revealed to be, that is possibly going to be overturned this summer, and a local station did a story about it, and the news director is male, they have a single woman's voice in that story. And I remember thinking, it's 2022. How can we do a story about Roe v., you know, abortion being overturned as, from being legal and not have a single woman's voice on the air talking about that? And so that was a reminder that as far as we've come, there are still these lapses that we need to be vigilant about. And I think the more diverse our journalism profession is, those lapses will be fewer and far between. That's my hope anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I keep just giving you these big questions that are probably hard to answer, but I have another.
I'll rattle on anyway.
I was thinking about how, you know, you've talked about the journalists that you've mentored and have gone on to have these big careers in journalism. You were also a professor for a while.
I was.
A teacher at the journalism school here in Missoula. I was never lucky enough to be in your class, but I would love to know, you know, if there's maybe one big idea or one piece of advice that you wanted these younger journalists to take away from interactions with you.
Yeah, I used to have an end of the semester sermon where I would
I love that.
Address just that. And I think I had like 10 points in the sermon, so I won't give you all 10 points.
Great.
And I love teaching, by the way. It made me a better journalist for sure. But two things are really super important if you're a journalist. One is the ability to listen. You really do have to pay attention to what people are saying, more attention than most people do pay when they're listening to somebody else. You know, we're trained to keep thinking ahead about what our next question is going to be, but you need to listen to what the answer is to the question you just asked. So that's number one. And then the second thing is credibility is everything. If you screw up, admit it. Don't screw up if you can, but we're going to. And so if you do, fess up and say how you did it and say that you learned from it, you're not going to do that again. Because if you lose credibility as a reporter, you really are in the wrong profession. It really matters a lot. So it's a stressful profession because you have to work so hard to get things right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So those are my two best advice. And, you know, journalism has changed so much. We could talk forever about that from my day,
right.
my early days. But even with all the changes, those two things are still really true for being a good reporter, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. A question I always ask, and I'm sure that you did too, that we've been trained to ask it at the end of all our interviews, and I want to leave time for, is if there's anything that I haven't brought up that you thought about or want to talk about, or anything that I, you know, haven't touched on yet.
Well, I'll finish what I've added to my sermon, I guess, which is that journalism has never mattered more than now, and I am so grateful that there are so many wonderful, talented, bright young journalists like you, Shaili, who are carrying on and doing it in the most challenging time probably ever to be a journalist, because there is animosity towards the profession now like there's never been before, and there's not as much support as I think there should be financially and otherwise for supporting young journalists. So between the lack of public and institutional support for our profession, I'm worried about it. But what assuages my worry is watching young reporters like you still dedicated to the profession and learning every day and doing the best job you possibly can. Because, I mean, you know, it is a profession that we can't live without and still have the kind of life and country and world that we want to live in.
Yeah, I so appreciate that, Sally, and I really do feel lucky to do this job, and like you were saying, access to history as it happens and sitting on the sidelines of you know, the state legislature is just so cool, and it does feel like a privilege, and sometimes it is a really hard job. Do you have any tips to avoid burnout as a journalist?
These are tips I wish I had taken myself, but I mean, we live in Montana, right? And so there are so many ways to enjoy a world outside of our head here. So have a physical life if you can outside of journalism, and get outside every day if you can, even if it's just for a minute or two. And then longer, you know, enjoy the riches of the beautiful state we live in, and that will sustain you. It sustained me for sure.
Yeah, we are lucky to be here.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, I'm grateful every day.
Yeah. I could probably talk to Sally for another like 3 hours if we wanted to get into it. So I think I'm going to cut myself off now.
Okay. Well, Shaili, thank you so much. Those were great questions, and maybe be thoughtful in my answers. I hope I was, but it was truly a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, same to you, Sally. And it's a little bit selfish for me to do this StoryCorps interview, because it's great to do the interview, but I get to ask you questions that I really want to know the answer to, you know, so it's been great. Yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Cool. All right.